This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. President Obama heads to Africa this week, making his first trip as president to his father's homeland of Kenya and then on to Ethiopia. When President Obama first took office, he was a global symbol and he spoke like a poet and a statesman. He spoke of turning the pages to history in Africa. As the first American black president and son of a Kenyan, that would be transformational for the continent. And there were some echoes of that old idealistic Obama at a reception yesterday marking the signing of the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which was first authorized in 2000.
Africa is a place of incredible dynamism, some of the fastest growing markets in the world, extraordinary people, extraordinary resilience, and it has the potential to be the next center of global economic growth.
But you can hear it there. It is also a more tempered and pragmatic Barack Obama who returns to Africa this week. An Obama who knows the difficulty of making change versus the ease of promising change. He's lived the contradictions in U.S. policy in Africa, calling for peace and democracy while supplying weapons to the military dictators in Egypt and a continued military presence in Somalia. Promises of electricity to 20 million Africans still unfulfilled. The United States and the West love to set lofty goals for Africa. There are the United Nations Millennium Development Goals to improve poverty, education, gender equality, child mortality, 21 other targets. This more pragmatic Obama will be hearing from a stronger and more skeptical set of voices in Africa this time. People like the three African writers who we spoke to this spring as part of the New York Penn World Voices Festival. Adewale Adaje is a Nigerian-born lawyer and playwright. Alain Mbanku is a French citizen born in the Republic of the Congo. And Yvonne Adhiambo Uwor is a Kenyan writer and author of the novel Dust. Yvonne from Kenya says she's tired of the platitudes from the well-meaning West.
Quite frankly, I think the first question is, what is democracy? I'm sure the models that have been perpetuated and propagated all over the world, I think people are a bit nervous about calling the emperor naked. Coming from Nairobi, where it's quite fascinating to see the whole world land and everybody trying to acquire a little stake in a different corner of the country, it obviously means that there's something amazing happening and there's something that the world desperately wants, actually desperately craves. 60% of the world's arable land, as you know, is on the African continent. But the responsibility, and quite frankly, my whole thing is, as an African people, we need to look within. We need to decide what it is that we actually do want for ourselves with our assets.
Well, let's talk about the mechanism for Kenyans answering that question you just posed. Mm-hmm. How do Kenyans figure out what it is they want as a government, as a political model? Certainly the Western models and, you know, American models of democracy are utterly discredited in this century so far.
I think you'd be speaking to a deep dream, one of those dreams that dare not speak out. We'd have to have the courage to look within. We'd have to have the courage to stop a while and ask ourselves, you know, eye to eye, and literally look into each other's eyes and say, but what do we want? Who are we? What future do we dare to dream for ourselves? We're always rushing to do this and rushing to do that and picking up this ideology and trying that method and having a coup d'etat, that kind of thing. But there's never been a moment of just stopping and asking, who are we? What do we want? What does our future look like, smell like, taste like, with what we have?
Can the three of you have a conversation like that, given the very different perspectives that you have on the continent, Nigerian, Kenyan, and from Congo? Is there a way that three writers could do exactly what you just suggested right there, Yvonne?
We could, actually. Maybe that's a challenge. We could, but we don't do it.
Well, go for it. Adewale, what do you want to say? What do you want in terms of a political future?
Well, I'm very much like Yvonne, that people should live for their dreams, not their nightmares. And I don't want to be defined by what I'm against. I want to be defined by what I'm for. Mm-hmm. And essentially, when I think about the African continent, what I want is a definition of African excellence. I want people to be able to have the debate, the discussion, to disagree, agree to disagree wherever possible, and explore the dreams. The one thing that this generation of Africans have to give their children is the space and the ability to think and to recognize that God never made a counterfeit. that there is something original about the African, like it is about any other group of people, and we should dare to start to think about what kind of world we want to create. There's so many things we can talk about in that context. The challenge of really learning from each other, the challenge of really defining the processes that work for us. One of the most definitive challenges of the African continent is how to collaborate effectively, how to organize. Organization is culturally determined. I mean, you don't have a French company operating like an American company, whereas African companies are getting MBAs in thousands, bringing them in and trying to impose some kind of linear, socially engineered structure on a very complex, adaptive situation. We never industrialized, so we don't have that social engineering thinking. And what it leads to is that we exclude the majority of our people in the design of the future. Usually we end up talking about poverty, but poverty of what? Poverty of material does not mean poverty of ideas. Poverty of material does not mean poverty of thought. It doesn't mean poverty of relationship. In my ethnic origin, the Yoruba people, we have about 30 words for wealth, and only one talks about money. Actually framing life in such a way that money becomes a dominant thing, that we're constantly doing instant gratification, that we are actually not prepared for our own. We borrow content that does not fit our context. And until we start to really be eclectic in what we bring in into the context of our dreams and our desires, we would always have the challenge of being a brand new second hand.
Alain, what would you add to this conversation?
I think that we need to get to know one another. For instance, when I meet Senegalese, we cannot speak another language than the French. I need to learn Wolof. I need to learn Yoruba. I need to learn Kikuyu. I think that Africans ignore themselves because we have a lot of knowledges which came from the Western civilization, but so we don't pay attention to our own cultures, who are very diverse. And the next step is like to make a kind of inventory of our cultures in order to find what we can put together, which gonna build maybe the next Africa, that Africa which gonna take care also of the world as it is changing right now.
Well, there'll be some Americans listening to this conversation, and I'm sure they'll be fascinated, but they might say to themselves, well, gosh, here all these well-meaning folks in the West have come up with these Millennium Development Goals and created all of these laudable missions for what's going on in Africa and for making things better for people. And here are these three writers saying, we don't want much to do with it all. How would you respond to that?
Let's go back to the basics. It comes back to the fundamental thing. What does it mean to be human? And I don't mean that even in a philosophical sense. I don't know. The well-meaning, and as you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. You have to live in the continent to experience the inundation of all these parachuting, well-meaning types with the mission plan and a messianic vision for you, who have not only spoken your entire world and vision, but have ensured that you have absolutely no space and place to speak, because actually the presumption is that you poor pathetic thing, you have absolutely no means of even understanding who you are in this place, a place in life. And don't worry, we've taken care of it all. It's beyond hubristic. And I think my generation has, I think, reached a point of beyond irritation. There's a kind of like, just stop it. Really, just stop it. And let's now start again and let's try to be human. Everybody has their dreams. Everybody has a particular vision. Everybody has a longing. The questions that exercise somebody in Texas also exercises a person in my village in Kano. What does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be human? What's the meaning of my life? And the meaning of my life are not these vague, wafty things called Millennium Development Goals or the idiotic idea of eradicating extreme hunger or, you know, the reduction of the human being into sound bites, commoditized sound bites. that look good on business plans or annual reports that absolutely nobody reads. I've reached a point of thinking, let's kind of, come on, guys, let's get real. The world's in trouble. There are a lot of solutions everywhere. Let's talk human to human. There are things we need to do, and we need to do them very quickly. And let's stop the wafting and the waffling.
Just stop it.
Just stop
sounds
it,
like,
really.
Sounds like yes, a great yes. book title. I'd love to see that on a UN document. Just stop it.
Oh, dare we hope.
Yeah. Adewale, what do you think?
Well, I start from Baltimore. I start from Ferguson. And I start from the streets of New York. And I see how Africa gets treated here. So it's that. Firstly, what does Africa mean to people when people engage Africa? What do they do with Africa in their own front garden, in their own street? And the second thing is I have a lot of people with what I'll call the European savior complex. Just as Yvonne was saying, okay, they're going to come and fix a problem. Well, if you really want to fix a problem, first you have to have a good understanding of what you see as a problem. I certainly think that we in the African continent need to be a bit more assertive mm-hmm. about our dreams. I don't want to blame anybody. I don't want to, you know, I'm big, bad, and ugly enough to own my own problems and make it work. I have spent the past few months working on peace building in the Niger Delta. I find it really fascinating that people develop a sense of entitlement without a sense of involvement. And that is a state of orientation that comes from somebody coming in and telling you they will fix your problem and they own your problem. So it's not helpful. It can be destructive, but we have to start from the premise that Africans have to love themselves.
Alain?
Yes, I think also I don't want to be a kind of African who is like crying because he's suffering, he's doing that and that. I need to find my own solution. I don't want to be defined by the other. I don't want to be like this kind of African who is waiting for the help of the other people. Africa is now. Your destiny is in your own mind and in your own hands.
Well, Adewale, Yvonne, and Alain, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Adewale Adaji is a Nigerian-born lawyer and playwright. Alain Mbanku is a French citizen born in the Republic of the Congo. And Yvonne Adhiambo Awor is a Kenyan writer and author of the novel Dust. They joined us earlier this year while they were on a trip to New York City.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.